I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome, friend. It's August 2nd. International Beer Day, baby. Hell yeah! Now, I'm not sure if that means the holiday is international or if you're supposed to buy international beer, but just in case, I got us a fine import. Here, have a Hams Amigo. All the way from the land of blue sky waters. A Minnesota, you say, Chester? Well, that's international enough, I guess. Hell, come on in, friend. All right. Hey, I don't have the time just now, but remind me to tell y'all about SimplyScaryPodcast.com. There's something about for as little as $5 a month, you get the whole catalog dating back to 2012, ad-free and available to download or stream. We'll get around to it at some point. Same goes for patreon.com/DrewBlood. All right, y'all, smoke them if you got them and drink those glasses to the bottom, because your old pal Drew Blood has a tale to tell. So our first tale tonight comes courtesy of our old pal Aaron Vleck, who's been with us since season one. In this one, we join Sheriff Roy Varick, whose town is having an unusual autumn. So without further delay, I give you, from author Aaron Vleck, In the Leaves. The leaves turned early that year and dropped into the dust of this god-awful place that rises up off the shores of the desert like steam from an unknown place. A real ghost town in the making. I shoulda noticed. Shoulda paid more heed early on. Me, of all people, goddammit. Roy Varick here. Sheriff Roy Varick, if you follow things like titles and such that burden a man with shoes, he's got no damned idea how to feel. Now, truth be told, there ain't more than a handful of scraggly trees in a place that don't see much more rain than the desert itself. But they manage to hang on year after year, those stubborn old trees do, and drop their handful of leaves in the dirt come fall. But I ain't making no excuses for myself, no sir. I own up to every bit of what happened later, and will bear that weight around my neck like a gallows rope to the end of my days. So, like I was saying, the leaves turned and dried up and fell, some of them making their way to scatter their mess across the wooden walkways out front of the general store, the saloon, and the hotel and the rest of the places out there along Main Street. I pay a couple of the little shavers to keep it swept clean, and they're glad for work that keeps them in sarsaparilla and chewing gum for a few days, and maybe a dime novel or two. After a few days, though, folks started talking about little wind devils kicking up and swirling the leaves around like pint-sized tornadoes not more than a few inches high. The kids would chase the dang things up and down the street like some poor man's football, and when they'd kick them, they just fell apart. So that went on for a few days, and some of the damn swirly things grew knee-high to a full-grown man. I was walking back to the jailhouse from the saloon one night and must have tripped on something, and down I went. My legs was covered in those blasted leaves, sticking to me like burrs and yanking on me real hard. I kicked like the devil and tore myself free, ripping the damn things off me and crushing them into dust. I stood up and saw two more swirling piles of leaves just watching on, and I swear I saw a pair of dark glittering eyes looking out at me from deep inside. Black, hateful eyes. I could have sworn something inside was laughing at me. I walked over and crushed those leaves and they just fell apart and there was nothing inside. I blamed it on strong drink, but just the same, I decided it was high time I took a ride out to see my buddy Jacob, who's got a place a good day's ride from town in the middle of nowhere in Hill's own half acre. That was my plan. Head out first thing and see what old Jacob had to say about all this. And that's what I did. But not before something else happened. Something terrible bad that's gonna chew my insides till I go to my grave, and no doubt well beyond if there's any comeuppance to be had. It was early, just past sunup, and I was packing a few things and getting ready to ride out when I heard a scream that chilled me to my boots from out front. I tore open the door and ran into the street. There was little Toby Hayes, just 6 years old, rolling around in the dirt, screaming and wrestling for dear life like he was getting ate up. The kid was swallowed under a mess of leaves, his mama yelling and grabbing for her boy, but every time she went for him, her hands and arms came back all chewed up and bleeding, so all she could do was stand there bawling. I grabbed a broom and went to town on the leaves, and soon enough they fell away and just laid there like little Toby Hayes, dead and lifeless. A crowd of people helped the mama pick her son up and they carried him off to the docks. There'd be time to get the whole story from folks, but I knew what I'd seen. But there was no time to waste getting out to Jacob's place to see if he could help or shed any kind of light on the situation. Now Jacob, he's somebody it took some fair amount of time getting used to. His place ain't more than a one-room shack. He's got no horse, so I got no idea how he gets around, even if he does, and maybe I don't care, and shouldn't fret on it too much. An old codger, skinny as a wire and sun-baked. He keeps some chickens, has a well, it's a miracle has any water in it at all, and manages to pull a few spuds from the dirt now and then. And some tough old greens as tired and leathery as he is. We've got an understanding of sorts, though, me and Jacob. Time to time, I bring him supplies from town, and time to time, he helps me out with things pertaining to my line of work, best not left to traditional means and methods. And being a one-horse town as we are, and being left to ourselves mostly, things work out pretty well. You may have heard tell of how old Jacob helped me out with that kid a while back, the one who'd massacred a whole slew of people all over these parts for nothing more than the sheer fun of it. I'd finally run the little bastard aground, trussed him up like a spring hog, and hauled him out to Jacob's place where I let things take their natural and rightful course. I didn't stick around to behold the proceedings, but then I never do. I don't want to get ahead of myself here in case this is the first time we're making each other's acquaintance, you and me. You could say Jacob has a side to him that's pure monster, and you'd be right, no doubt about that. But unless you've done wrong by somebody, really done them wrong, you got nothing to fear from Jacob. Besides, he stays out there in his shack, never ventures into town, and anybody passing by will just get away from what looks like some old prospector left high and dry after the last of the mines around here failed and shut down, and that's just the way we like it. First time I knew there was something odd about old Jacob, never got his last name, and maybe he don't even got one, was when I was chasing some rustlers out of the territory who had left 5 men dead in the middle of the night when they hit a drive out of Abilene unawares. And that hadn't been the first evil notches those boys, 3 brothers they were, earned in their nefarious career. I followed them out to Jacob's place and saw them disappear inside. I knew some old coot lived there on his own and figured I'd take the 3 by surprise and be a good Samaritan on the side. I took my Winchester from my saddle, made sure she was packing a full load and had plenty more in my pocket, then headed for the shack. I yelled for those boys to throw their guns out and step onto the porch unarmed, or I was going to come in shooting. Everything was real quiet in there, and I feared the worst for the old codger. Then the screams started in something fierce. Screams like men was getting skint alive and their souls dragged kicking straight to hellfire. More than just one old man screaming. So I tried the door, but it was bolted shut. Tried kicking it in next, but it wouldn't budge. From the looks of that old shack, I thought I'd have been able to knock it down with one swift kick of my boot, but that door was like trying to kick in a bank vault. Suddenly, everything got quiet again, and I tried to get inside.
"You okay in there, old man? What's going on?"
I yelled.
"Let me in."
"That you, Roy? Roy Varick, the sheriff?"
An all too robust and hearty old man's voice rang out from the inside of the shack.
"The same? You need any help in there?"
"No, sir,"
he replied.
"All's taken care of in here. You just sit out there on the porch for a bit. I need to clean myself up. Then I'll be out and we can talk over some things."
"And those three old boys in there, they causing you any trouble?"
I asked, hefting my Winchester to the ready.
"Oh, no,"
he said, letting out a hearty chuckle.
"I'm afraid those boys ain't going to give you or anybody else any bother ever again."
"All right," I said. "Well, I'm out here. You come talk to me when you're good and ready."
"That I will, Sheriff Roy. That I will,"
he said, and started banging around inside and making an awful racket. I dragged the rickety old stool down the porch a bit in case I needed aiming room if the old man came out swinging, or worse. Soon the door opened and a wiry old man, straight as a whip and weathered like an old saddle, stepped onto the porch and set a wooden chair down in front of me.
"You won't be needing that,"
he said, pointing his chin toward my gun.
"I don't mean you no harm. Those old boys in there, they're good as dead, and there ain't enough of them left to bury. Besides, I'd just as soon keep them if you don't mind. I'm guessing you won't be hankering after any hard glances from territory headquarters, am I right?"
he said with a gleam in his eye.
"I suppose you're right. I don't rightly know what happened in there to those boys," I began. "No, sir, you don't," he said, slapping his knee and letting a jaw full of plug fly towards the dirt, or what I hoped real bad was plug. "That's right. I lost sight of them out here somewhere when it was coming on dark and figured they was gone for good," I said uneasily and squirming a bit in my chair.
"And that you did. That you rightly did. Lost them forever in the desert. No hide nor hair ever to be seen again."
"Okay," I said, wary of where this was all going, and knowing something damned weird was laying just beyond my vision, and hoping I'd get a ride out of here and not meet whatever fate was taking down those three rustlers.
"So where do we stand? You and me, that is," I asked, pretty sure I was holding my breath.
"About what?"
the old man asked.
"I mean, am I free to ride out of here? Alive, that is?"
The old man's face cracked into a grin, and he roared,
"Hell yeah! Say, how'd you like some coffee? I made a fresh pot not long ago, and I might even have some pie. I make a mean pie,"
he added with a wink. Over pie and coffee, I tried to make sense of a creature that to all rights was just a nice old codger who lived on his own, but who had a side to himself when it was called on, and he was suitably riled by evildoers that weren't no part of a man at all, and didn't look like one when his way or his nature was on him, as he called it. I hadn't seen it having its way with those rustlers, and I didn't need to.
I believed every last word of the old man's yarn because I had heard what was going on in that shack when those wrestlers met their end, and I wasn't likely to ever forget it. And I sure as hell didn't need to see what was inside that shack now. There was nothing here for a sheriff to worry on, because I did believe Jacob meant no harm to the town or anybody else who didn't deserve it. Well, that was 10 years ago, and Jacob's been as good as his word. We had worked out a system where if I had somebody who had likely slipped through the cracks of justice, somebody on my watch who was just so damned evil, all he needed was to disappear, I'd bring him out to Jacob's place and leave the rest to him. In exchange, I'd go back in a couple of days, after he had cleaned up and taken a long sleep off, and drop off a few things. Bacon, coffee, sugar, and flour. Things like that. I'd offered to bring by a bottle now and then, but he always refused, saying it played hell with his nature and made him uncertain of things, and I never pried. Over the years, there was more than a few who had made Jacob's acquaintance and never again troubled so much as a blade of grass on this God's green earth. So when this business with the leaves started up in town, the first thing I thought of was Jacob, who I hoped had some sort of idea of what was going on, given his nature and all, and probably having some knowledge of Hank stuff from the other side of things where he hailed from himself.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
We sat there on the porch drinking coffee and eating sandwiches, and I laid it all out, him nodding, throwing a question at me here and there, and me answering as best I could. When I'd finished, he shut his eyes and sat back, thinking or going inside his head to some secret place. After what seemed like a couple of hours or better, he opened his eyes and took a long, hard look at me. "Okay, Roy. You know you're asking me to come into town with you, right?" "Well, no," I started to protest. "Just tell me what you think. You got any idea what this thing is? What can I do? You got any sayings or spells I can use?" "Sorry, Roy, you're not up to wrangling with anything but flesh and blood. Not sure what this thing is, but one thing is for sure. I gotta get up close to feel it. Take its measure. I don't imagine it'd be too hard to put down, but there is one problem." "Yeah, what's that?" "The town. I'll come with you, but on one condition." "Anything. You name it," I assured him. "When I ride into town, from then to the time I ride back out, everybody's got to stay behind locked doors and curtains drawn tight and stay there. No peeking through curtains. No catching any glimpse of me or anything. No hiding on rooftops. No nothing. Everybody sits down, their backs to the street, and they stay there till you give the all clear. Can you guarantee me that one courtesy, Sheriff Roy Varick? If I need to fight a thing, and my way comes on me, and it surely will, I want no man, woman, child, or old yeller dog seeing me and remembering what is mine and mine alone. Can you promise me that, Roy?" I thought about it for a minute, mostly out of respect and to show I knew the importance of the request. Then I gave him my oath, and we shook on it. After that, we got both of us on my horse and headed back to town. I set him down a ways outside and rode in to call a town meeting and see if any more mayhem had occurred in my absence. An old mule had been taken down and a couple of horses had their legs scraped up a bit, but those hooves made fast work of the leaves and whatever was inside them melted into dust and moved on to look for easier prey. I hope to God nobody else had caught sight of those black liquid eyes inside the nest of leaves, or heard that chuckling that ground my nerves like broken glass. The town meeting went well enough, and everybody swore an oath to the condition of no trying to steal a glimpse of old Jacob, no trying to see anything weird they'd got no damn business seeing. I warned them hard and knew some of them would try to look, but I warned them again. Shamed the ones who need to be shamed for trying to rob a man of his rightful privacy. I even lied to keep the ones in line who needed a harder incentive with tales of Medusa and folks getting turned to stone, whatever it took to keep 10 years of trust in place and to be able to rely on Jacob's help when there was call. When I was satisfied everybody was tucked away, I went and fetched the old man and dropped him off in the middle of the street where he told me to. Then I went to the jailhouse, locked up my shutters, pulled my own curtains tight, and sat down to wait. In all these years, I had never seen Jacob when his way was upon him, and I had no plans to start now. Besides, I'm a man of my word. I'd heard those sounds it made. A cacophony of grunts and squeals and slurping noises and wailing that liked to call the heavens down, or something else to rise up from below. I'd heard those sounds of him all right, of it, snaking and shimmying around over the floor, stuff getting tossed around, stuff breaking, and that was more than enough for me, and that had been 10 years ago. The streets were damn near a ghost town. So far every soul was as good as his word and stayed locked behind curtains and shutters, and it seemed nobody dared sneak a peek. A few leaves fluttered defiantly against the window of the jailhouse, but Roy didn't know if that was anything or not. The same with the light breeze that came up suddenly, rattled his door, then died away to nothing just as fast, leaving everything as silent and still as the graveyard next to Mount Holy Church of the Lord's Obedience True Mystery Tabernacle. And standing up straight and true, unmoving as any gravestone, was an old man who's been calling himself Jacob for a good long while now. Not a hair on the old man's head moved as the town seemed to hold its breath, waiting for what, nobody knew, except maybe Jacob. Then a lone leaf floated lazily down the street, dipping into the dust and rising back up, carried away on the light breeze. The leaf floated up to Jacob like it was searching for him, and it probably was, and Jacob knew it. The leaf touched the old man's hair, then moved off. Then it grazed the back of his neck real light and playful-like, and Jacob just stood there letting it take his measure. Then the leaf stuck to the old man's scraggly whiskers like a thorn, and Jacob had enough of its nonsense. He grabbed the leaf in his hand and crushed it to dust, then wiped his hands clean and watched as it fell into the street where it stayed like a dead leaf, which it was. Now, that's when more leaves kicked up in a gust of wind that carried one, then two, then a few more leaves toward the old man, where he pretty much ignored them as they tried harder and harder to mess with him. And still, old Jacob ignored them, which probably set a fire underneath whatever was guiding those leaves his way, as being ignored is going to rile up anybody. And still, Jacob waited. Then a wind blew up like they never saw in that town, and with it came a gust of leaves more than all the trees in those parts could account for. Millions upon millions of dry brown leaves washed over Jacob and swallowed him whole so he could no longer see the street. But it was the deep chuckle and the black eyes, cold and dead like shark's eyes, that told Jacob that it was time to face what was in the leaves. And if it was a fight the thing was looking for, it was a right fine fight it had found for itself. The leaves swarmed over Jacob's body like they were looking for some kind of entrance, like a swarm of fat white maggots hungry to feed and getting all excited, finding no fight in the old man's leathery brown body. All of a sudden, Jacob fell over in the street like he went down under the weight of the leaves or some presence inside them made him do it. Or had he thrown himself down into the dirt? Then he started twisting around, frantically scrambling around in the street, thrashing around violently like old King Bass on his last fishing line, getting bigger and longer and starting to coil around. Jacob was no longer Jacob anymore, but looked for all the world like a huge brown serpent growing by the minute, its scales glittering like new panned gold in the high noon sun. Then it happened. The old man's way come fully upon him like a thunder from the heavens, and his nature was in full bloom with no holding back. Jacob's head exploded in the glory of a crowned serpent's head, its jaws dripping venom and snapping, its long forked tongue stabbing the air, looking for something to get a hold of and drag down into those gigantic jaws. But that was not the whole of it. Jacob's 2 feet coiled tight together, then burst into a second fine crown of glory just like the one that was on his head. Now, this was Jacob with all his nature and glory upon him, who was starting to chuckle after a fashion as the leaves joined ranks tightly around his body and tried to go to work on him. They wrestled like this for a bit, back and forth, neither gaining any ground nor giving up any either. Then all of a sudden, Jacob went limp and stopped struggling. And the thing in the leaves that had no form of its own stopped fighting too, chuckling louder now like it owned Jacob and could take him any time it felt so inclined. That's just what Jacob had been waiting for all along, biding his time and not worrying a damn bit. The old man brought his 2 crowned heads together and started squeezing tighter and tighter like a vice sucking all those leaves down, chewing and gulping greedily, taking it all down along with whatever was inside those leaves. All down into those 2 great dripping mouths, and the leaves could make no resistance. Suddenly there was a great roar of terror that rattled every window in town, and screaming as something fought hard to free itself. Soon those leaves were gone, every last one of them, along with whatever was carrying them, guiding them to do its bidding. Jacob, he just coiled up and went into his sleep like he always did after a good feed. The leaves was nothing, of course, but the old man knew how to hold that other thing inside of himself while the salts and juices of his great long belly digested the whole of it and sent it into the great beyond after taking his fill of what he wanted from it. Jacob could only afford a short repose, being out of the safety of his own shack. But he needed that repose to get rid of what was in his belly before he was himself again. And before too long, he was once again the reclusive, leathery old man. He got up out of the street, dusted himself off, and made his way to the jailhouse.
Sheriff Roy, all's done now, and yous all can come out in a bit,
Jacob yelled, and Roy appeared on the porch like he had been waiting, which naturally he had been.
You mind if we take a ride out to my place? I needs my beauty sleep,
Jacob added.
Sure thing, Jacob,
Roy said, and managed a snort of laughter. The ride back was real quiet. Jacob settled into the saddle of old Dan, one of Roy's retired saddle horses who had done years of good service as a sheriff's horse and was still frisky while enjoying his golden years. Neither man said much, Jacob keeping his mouth shut and Roy only asking those few questions he dared to ask, and Jacob only coming back with a word or two. They reached the shack as the sun dipped toward the horizon and covered the desert with a blood-red glow. Sitting out front on the porch and tossing back coffee like it was shots of whiskey and watching the sun turn purple and finally melt behind the mountains that clung to the horizon, Roy finally spit out what was on his mind, the one question he hadn't gotten up the backbone to ask till now.
So, Jacob, what was that thing?
Roy asked, his lips parched and his breath a dry wheeze in his throat.
It's gone. Gone for good, right?
Sun's about down for the night, Jacob said casually, ignoring Roy's question until he was good and ready.
Yep, Roy said sharply but held his tongue.
You're welcome to bed down in the barn, warm and dry in there, and I got a cot and a clean bedroll somewhere.
Nope.
Roy barked without hesitation, hoping Jacob hadn't seen him shudder.
I think I best get back to town.
And Jacob chuckled to himself. Okay, Roy, suit yourself. Now, about that question of yours. I don't rightly know how to answer you, but I'll give it a go as best I can.
As to what that thing was, well, I don't rightly know. Never seen a critter like that one before. But you see, you folks got all kinds of things in this world. Flying and crawling around, running and all kinds of things. Why, hell, I heard tell in some place in this world there's critters that look mostly like a man, but covered in hair and a darn sight bigger, swinging through the trees buck naked.
Jacob roared and slapped his knee once and then again for emphasis.
Well, the same is true of the other side. All kinds of things and folks, too. I got no idea what all's out there. And before you ask, Jacob said, seeing Roy open his mouth, I got no real idea what in blazes the hell I am either. Not rightly. I've never come across anybody quite like me, or that other fellow either. Not much to that one but spite and heavy breathing, which was why he took up rooting them leaves. But he's gone now. You never know mind about that.
Well, I guess that's it then, Roy said, not sure of where things stood and not sure what else to ask without Jacob getting riled and maybe taking offense at some slight or breach of protocol in these matters that Roy knew nothing about and sure didn't want to stumble into. With caution, he liked old Jacob, and he wanted to count on him for those special jobs he couldn't sort out any other way. No matter what the fellow really was on the inside, for better than 10 years, he'd just been old Jacob. Roy got on his horse and headed out without another word, and Jacob just watched the sheriff ride off.
See you next time, Sheriff Roy Varick. See you next time.
Jacob called out as Roy's backside got smaller and smaller. All Jacob could see was Roy's hand raised in a silent wave of farewell. Jacob sat there on the porch, sipping his coffee and chuckling, savoring every drop of that dark brew and the dusk as it chased the last of the sun behind the mountains.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
That was In the Leaves by Aaron Vleck. In case you don't remember it, this story is tied in with Making Ends Meet, which you can hear on Season 1, Episode 24, entitled Bad Juju. It's a good one, worth revisiting. Our next story tonight comes courtesy of Gray Walker. In this one, we join a retired detective whose past comes back to haunt him. So without further delay, from author Gray Walker, I give you Nemesis.
He was excited. His right hand twitched as he slowly opened the window, and his breath hitched in his throat. He took in a few quiet breaths to calm himself down. He knew he needed to keep himself collected if he was going to do this right. Stepping into the master bedroom with nary a sound, his ears picked up on something. Snoring. His excitement gave way to fury as he wondered how in God's name this beast could sleep after what he had done. He calmed himself down again. He needed to do this right. He crept closer to the bed, his eagerness growing with each second. "Psst!" he whispered as his head hovered inches over the prey. Then saying in a quiet, sing-song voice, "Eddie, time to wake up, Eddie." He giggled excitedly, like a child holding a wrapped Christmas present, waiting to begin tearing the paper off. Eddie stirred, and then his eyes slowly opened. This was always his favorite part. Eddie's breath caught in his throat, and his eyes widened to the size of saucers as he saw the masked man with the grinning mouth and eight eyes. Before he could scream, he jabbed Eddie in the neck with a syringe, paralyzing him almost instantly. The most he could do was let out weak, choked moans that he tried to will into cries of terror. The intruder opened the bag he had brought with him, removing the block of wood that he placed between Eddie's ankles. Then he removed the belt and used it to fasten his ankles around the block. It was when he removed the small sledgehammer that Eddie realized what was happening. He couldn't even close his eyes as the intruder slowly, teasingly swung the hammer near his left knee, like a batter taking practice swings before a pitch. Eddie wished he could scream. He wished he could have a heart attack and die right there. But no such thing happened. Instead, the attacker raised the hammer slowly. Then, like Poe's pendulum, the hammer swung with a wild fury. Mark Alden's hand shook as he gazed at the photograph, his other hand inching towards his pocket before remembering that he had quit smoking some time ago. During his 25 years on the force, Mark had always felt the need to smoke at a crime scene. With the brutality he had witnessed, from serial killings to domestic disputes gone particularly wrong, he always felt the need to take a puff of those bitter, earthy fumes deep into his lungs. And right now, despite being nowhere near the scene, he was wishing he had one. He wished he had an entire convenience store's worth. The photo displayed a man hanging from the banisters of his two-story suburban home by his broken ankles, his knees shattered and his throat slashed. His right hand had been removed. His cold, glassy eyes stared ahead, seeming to ask the world why he needed to die like this, if he did anything that bad. Mark recognized the victim, and he would have told the body that he had done something that bad. Edward Anderson had killed his wife during a heated argument followed by three more people over the course of 2 months. He was dubbed the Witching Hour Cleaver for his victims' approximate times of death. The only reason he was allowed to leave prison was because somehow he had a childhood friend with deep pockets and a career in politics. There were 7 other photos, all containing people Mark had failed to bring to justice, from sex offenders to gangsters. Then there was the letter that had come with the photo. With trepidation, he began to read the contents.
"Dear Mr. Alden, I'm truly sorry for the inconvenience.
I understand that you retired from police work 3 years ago. From what I've gathered, you were a talented detective for the Seattle Police Department. However, for all of your successes, you've had your failures as well. It's nothing to be ashamed of. Nobody's perfect, right? Anyhow, being that you were no longer active on the force, I decided to take the liberty of finishing up 8 of the most egregious cases you were unable to close, particularly where the culprit ended up with a lighter sentence despite overwhelming evidence to convict them. Case in point, no pun intended, Mr. Edward Anderson. With your involvement in that case and with the frustration you must have felt at being unable to put him away, why, I had to do something to give you closure. I realized that there were probably more tasteful ways to go about it, but I felt that you could never gain true resolution unless you knew for sure that the witching hour cleaver was dead. Rest assured, though, your sleepless nights are at an end. I don't know how often you watch or read the news, whichever medium you prefer to consume, but including Mr. Anderson, I've taken care of them. There's really no need to thank me. On the contrary, I'm the one who owes you gratitude. In the meantime, I do hope Toto's taking care of you. After undergoing trauma such as yours, any man would need companionship of some kind, even an esteemed detective like yourself. Regards, Nemesis.
Mark could feel the ache of the old bullet wounds, one in his left shoulder, the other on the right side of his chest. Suddenly, he was back there, the musty smell of the abandoned apartment, his fist rapping on the door, the bloodshot eyes of Joe Reyes, the gloomy eyes of his 8-year-old son, Michael, in the corner surrounded by cobwebs. The shots, the tinnitus, the cry of officer down from his partner, John, into his radio. He dropped the letter and the photo before he sank into the sofa, his breaths coming shallow and rapid. There was a familiar sound of claws clicking on the wood floor, and Toto, his German shepherd, poked his head over the side of the couch. Toto, despite being much larger than his namesake, often seemed to think he was much smaller, as evidenced by how he climbed over the side of the couch to reach Mark and lay his head on his lap. Placing a shaky hand on Toto's soft head, Mark began the gradual process of grounding himself. He looked around the room, focusing on specific objects. A framed photo on the wall of him graduating from the police academy, the potted hydrangea in the corner, the red bookshelf, Toto's therapy dog vest hanging on the rack. Soon, Mark felt his breathing began to slow down and become more natural. He looked down at the dog, who in turn looked up at him expectantly. Taking a deep breath, he smiled tiredly and patted Toto's head. He sat up and then looked down at the photos and letter he had dropped before picking them up. Now in a more stable mindset, he could try to make better sense of this. He began to take stock of the basic foundations of any investigation, what he knew and what he didn't know. He didn't know of any specific people who had displayed such an unhealthy obsession with him, or why they would target people who had escaped him. Sure, he had enemies, what former cop didn't, but why would someone go to this trouble? As for what he knew, the stranger was knowledgeable of Greek mythology, or had done a cursory Google search, hence the choice of their alias, the Goddess of Retribution. They probably fancied themselves some sort of vigilante. They knew that he suffered from PTSD and agoraphobia and had to have cased his house beforehand. but that wasn't possible. He didn't go out often, if ever. He would have noticed someone creeping around the house. Then it hit him. Over the past couple of weeks, he had been hearing creaks and scratches in his attic. Each time, Toto had growled, and Mark had dismissed it as mice or rats, and if they had hand-delivered the note. He rushed to his bedroom, then opened the gun safe in his closet and retrieved his Model 60 revolver. He performed a quick check of the firearm, then carefully loaded it. Aiming in front of him, he slowly ascended the attic stairs, entering his well-furnished room, but found nothing amiss. Then something out of the corner of his eye grabbed his attention. There was a hole in the wall. It only occurred to him then that the attic didn't span the whole house. Something he had noticed when first moving in, but never paid attention to. He wasn't stupid enough to peek directly into the hole, but from a distance, all he could see were vague silhouettes, though of what he couldn't say. However, the location of the regular attic and whatever lay beyond that wall caused a dreadful idea to stir in his mind. Sweat running down his face, Mark went to the kitchen and retrieved a step stool, then used it to prop himself up closer to the ceiling of his bedroom closet. He felt around, then began knocking on the ceiling, desperately hoping he wouldn't find what he thought he would. But sure enough, he heard a hollow thud. He then pressed on the right side of the ceiling. A click sounded, and he pulled back a sliding door that blended in seamlessly. His heart dropped to his stomach, and he felt the ache starting up again. He thought he was on the verge of another attack, but willed himself to stay focused. If this secret passage to the attic was somehow tied to this nemesis, then he needed to find out how. He checked his pocket for his cell phone, relieved to find it there. If there was anything that could tie back to Nemesis, he would call them, then make sure that even if the perp came back, he couldn't destroy the evidence. Toto whined, and Mark pet his head reassuringly. "Don't worry, boy," he said in an attempt to calm the poor dog down, even though he was still nervous as ever. Grabbing a flashlight, Mark reluctantly clambered up the entrance. Expecting it to be a crawl space, he was surprised by how large the room was. He shone the light around and then noticed a wall on his left. There was a small hole there letting in some light. He didn't need to look in it to know that it was his regular attic. Something else caught his attention. It was an odd smell. He and any detective knew it like the back of their hands, and it made him clutch the revolver like some kind of talisman. It was a coppery smell, with another strange aroma, salt. His hand shaking, he shone his flashlight toward the origin point of the smell.
Ah!
He screamed when he saw them and stumbled back. Hands. A collection of 8 hands hung from a series of overlapping threads like a spider's web. And indeed, the hands themselves almost seemed to resemble the arachnids. Some of them were fresher, others were dried out like those of a mummy. Near the web was a small table or desk with an assortment of objects, including salt, embalming fluid, and a journal. He didn't go any further. This was a crime scene, and anything he did would contaminate it. As he was about to exit and call the police, he suddenly felt something jab into his neck, and he fell to the ground. When he came to, he found himself tied to a chair, gagged and facing a strange man wearing a black bodysuit, 2-piece mask with 8 eyes, and a grinning mouth. Mark's gun lay idly on an old table. Relief ran through him as he heard Toto barking downstairs, though it was short-lived as the intruder began speaking.
"What did you think, Detective Alden?"
he asked with childlike enthusiasm, gesturing at the hands.
Quite the piece of workmanship, if I do say so myself.
He let out a giggle at Mark's glare.
Oh, come now, detective. It was the least I could do for you. After what you did for me, I couldn't let the shot you took be for nothing.
The glare changed to confusion, then realization. The intruder removed both pieces, revealing a young man with familiar dead eyes. Michael Reyes, Joe's son. He turned away, going to the desk and removing a different syringe, as well as an assortment of bottles.
You saved me from my father, the old bastard. And for your actions, what did you get? 2 gunshots and a lifetime of PTSD.
A memory crept into his mind. He was in the hospital shortly after the Reyes case. He was still recuperating when one of the nurses told him that he had a visitor. After letting them welcome his guest, he was surprised to see the pale 8-year-old at the door. Even after watching his own mother die in front of him at Joe's hands, he seemed to be doing relatively all right. Then his cheeks reddened, and he began to cry softly. It wasn't the right sort of crying for a child, though. It was too grown up, too guilty. Mark tried to calm Michael down, attempting to rest a hand on the kid's shoulder, but an instinctive flinch caused him to draw his hand back reassuringly. The boy kept saying that he was sorry through his tears, something that broke Mark's heart. He actually believed that he was responsible for Mark getting injured. Mark had done his best to make light of his injuries, even cracking a few jokes that brought out some laughter from Michael. When the time came for his aunt to pick him up, Michael promised that he would make it up to Mark, to which the detective said he would never have to. Now that little boy was a man, and he had decided to make good on his promise in the worst possible way.
I was diagnosed similarly, you know, among other things. Except I didn't have much in the way of a proper support system. Oh, people kept saying they were sorry at first. But eventually my therapist told me I needed to let go.
He chuckled bitterly, then repeated,
"Let go. Let go. Let go!"
He suddenly shrieked, punching the wall and leaving a bloody smear where he had injured his knuckles. He took no notice, however, too wound up by his rage.
Easy for them to say. I had to live my life thinking about my dad shooting my mom and saying, "The bitch had it coming, son." Then keeping me in a shitty motel for days, maybe weeks. I didn't want anyone's goddamn pity.
His rant subsided, and he inhaled and exhaled, chuckling awkwardly as he bandaged his hand.
Sorry about that. I think you get the point. Anyway, I needed to find a way to thank you. It wasn't until after I came of age that it hit me. I would rid you of the guilt you must have felt, having to let them go.
He gestured at the hands as it sank in.
And then, once I had ensured that those demons of your past were purged, I would give you peace. I know how it feels to live watching the worst day of your life play out over and over again. You didn't deserve that. So I thought it would be only proper.
The explanation was cut short by Mark convulsing. Michael turned, then realizing that Mark was either having a seizure or a heart attack, he began panicking. He cut Mark's bonds and tried to lay him flat on his back, but he just kept convulsing until he eventually lay still. Michael began pounding his fist on Mark's chest in desperation, but to no avail. The former detective, his childhood hero, was dead. He began sobbing. So many years free of his father, so much time making it up to this poor detective, and he couldn't be the one to end his trauma. It wasn't fair. He had failed him again. First, he had gotten him shot, and now Mark's heart had given out so that he died in agony. His sobs were so bitter and anguished that he didn't notice Mark's fist clenched before striking Michael square across the jaw. In his shock, Michael fell back, clutching his jaw, as his tears from before kept running.
"Proper?"
Mark echoed as he stood up and looked down at Michael, picking up his gun and aiming.
"Hey, you think trying to kill me is a proper way to thank me for saving your life? I was doing fine before today, you know. You murder people I couldn't catch, make this thing as a gift, and tell me that the only cure for my PTSD is death? You call that proper?"
By this point, Mark was fuming, and Michael was just lying on the ground, dumbfounded. "Here's what's gonna happen," Mark said in a slightly calmer tone, but maintaining a cold edge to it. "You're going to lie there, and I'm going to call the police and let them look this place over. You even try to make a run for it, I'll put one between your eyes." Even Mark was surprised by his own brutality. Michael was motionless for what seemed like an eternity. Then in a shaky voice, he mumbled,
"All of that time, all of that effort I put into fixing your mistakes, and this is how you thank me?"
He looked up, his voice simmering with rage.
"You're just like the rest, aren't you, detective? You dismiss my problems by..."
"You didn't do this to help me. You did it because you were hurting, and you need to make someone else feel it with you. You're as selfish as your father. Maybe worse."
With a sudden speed he hadn't exhibited before, Michael drew a knife from his side and slashed him across the chest, right where the bullets had made their marks. Fresh pain radiated from them as he cried out and fell back on the floor. The vigilante stalked forward, ready to plunge his knife into his fallen idol. A shot rang out, leaving his right hand a mangled mess. Before he even had time to process the pain, another shot sounded, the bullet leaving a hole in his forehead and causing him to fall backward. Blood poured from his wound like a fountain, mixing with his tears. His face was frozen in an expression of muted shock. Panting, Mark slowly climbed down from the attic where Toto was waiting for him, barking and whining incessantly. It felt like he was on autopilot. Luckily, the cut was just a flesh wound despite the pain, and he was able to bandage it easily. He reached for his phone and dialed for the police. He explained the entire situation to the operator, then sat down at the kitchen table, placing the gun there as well to await the arrival of the officers. He was still trying to cope with the fact that a murderer had been living here, and Mark had just put two rounds in him. He knew that he had reasonable grounds for self-defense, but still, the fact that he just put down the little boy who stared out at him hopelessly so long ago was difficult to wrap his head around. He also couldn't help but feel some guilt at his last words to Michael. Toto nudged Mark's leg. He just smiled tiredly and patted the dog's head as he heard sirens in the distance.
And that was Nemesis by our pal Gray Walker. A good reminder to peek up in the attic every so often. Probably just a squirrel, but who the hell knows? A little about our authors tonight. Aaron Vleck is the author of The Private Collector,
and a cult detective series appearing on the Wicked Library podcast. She also has a growing collection of Lovecraftian tales where she tackles the mad Arab, Abdul al-Hazred, and his origins, and a closer look at the machinations of the Deep Ones from their point of view, and an introduction to a daughter of the great Richard Upton Pickman. Erin is also the author of The Cases of Jeffrey Sykes Vermilion, an intrepid traveler and occult detective operating in the Edwardian era. Her work can be found in narrated form at Ghastly Tales, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and in Nocturnal Transmissions, and in print form in Occult Detective Quarterly, and of course at her own website, erinvleck.wordpress.com. Thanks, Erin. Gray Walker is a writer from Alabama with an MA in creative writing. His favorite genres of writing are sci-fi, fantasy, horror, or some mix in between. His main sources of literary inspiration include Stephen King, Cormac McCarthy, Isaac Asimov, and fellow Reddit authors Elias Witherow, C.K. Walker, no relation, Matt Demersky, and Dale Drake. He has a Reddit account at reddit.com/user/m-gray42. And you can find more of his writing at thegraywalker.wordpress.com. Thanks, Gray.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab one of these fancy hams and go walking around town like a sommelier. I promise everyone will be really impressed. And may the wind be at your back. May the road rise up to meet you. May your heart be happy, your smile be wide, and your pocket have a coin inside. And until next time, friends, go fuck yourselves. Good night, amigos.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.